you guys. Welcome back to my Flickers of Fear show, my little movie review thing that I have going here. If you hear some weird noise in the background, like right now, we're having very, very strange winter weather here in Florida, and it's really windy, and it's kind of raining off and on. So if you hear anything like over there, that's what it is, because I'm up on the second floor, and for whatever reason, I get like all this, every time the wind blows, it's like this really, it sounds like a fucking horror movie out there. So that's what it is. But you know, it's kind of like adding to the whole atmosphere, I guess. So the movie that we're talking about today, this is kind of like, this is for sure a really forgotten movie. In fact, so forgotten that I had actually never heard of it in my whole entire life, even though I really like this era of film. I actually heard of this when I was watching a couple weeks ago, or actually like a week or, yeah, just a week ago, I watched, there's an excellent documentary. I've brought it up on a couple of our shows previously, and Shudder just added it. And it's called Woodlands Dark and Days Bewitched, A History of Folk Horror. And it's about 3 hours and 15 minutes long, and it's excellent. So if you have Shudder, I really do recommend it. Now, so Shudder added that, and they also added several movies that were brought up in the course of the documentary. And like I said, the documentary takes like a deep fucking dive, and it's not just the folk horror that we're familiar with here in the US, maybe, where it's kind of like, you know, British folk horror like Wicker Man, or American folk horror like, I don't know, maybe like Children of the Corn or Harvest Home or something like that. It covers those, but it covers stuff like from all around the world, and even does some stuff about kind of like Haitian voodoo type films and that kind of stuff. So it's really comprehensive. Now, in that documentary, they talked about some Australian folk horror films. You know, a lot of which had to do with kind of like indigenous beliefs and stuff like that. In passing, they mentioned this one right here, which is sort of, I guess, yeah, you could call it a folk horror movie in the sense that, you know, the antagonists are kind of like remnants of, or a modern day Celtic, they kind of worship a Celtic goddess demon-ish kind of situation. So in the, and there is kind of like a Stonehenge-y kind of thing going on in it as well, maybe kind of the same way as Halloween 3, gave me a little bit of a vibe of that. Although, to be honest, this reminded me quite a bit of something like Rosemary's Baby, although it's not as great as that, but you know, it had that kind of like vibe to it. This movie is called Allison's Birthday. And as I said, I had never heard of this in my whole entire life. And I've seen some Australian horror. And, you know, so I'm not averse to it or anything. But it's just kind of like, this is one that sort of came and went, I guess. It came out the day after Christmas in Australia back in 1981. And I don't actually know. I think it was released in the US, but I think it was released as like part of a series or like on a disc with a bunch of other movies, like a bunch of other kind of like forgotten movies from around the world or whatever. And so I thought it was kind of cool. So I saw that, you know, it was mentioned offhand. I said, oh, that sounds kind of cool, even though they didn't go a lot into what it was about. They just showed a couple scenes from it. And I said, oh, that looks kind of cool, like, because I really like late 70s, early 80s kind of like creepy sort of movies like this. And so I saw the Shudder added it, so I was like, oh, what the hell, so we'll watch it. Now, I'm not gonna, okay, so one thing I will say, and I think the reason that I liked this so much was because, as I said, I'm really into like that late 70s, early 80s made for TV horror type vibe. If you grew up in that era, you kind of know what I'm talking about. Even though some of them weren't super scary, they obviously, because they were made for TV, they couldn't be real gory or real graphic or anything like that. But a lot of them really had kind of something about them that really resonated with me and really stuck with me over the years. And honestly, like a lot of great filmmakers, like Steven Spielberg, probably most famously, got his start doing TV horror. He did Duel, and he also did one called Something Evil, I believe, that was also quite good and quite creepy. So I really like that kind of vibe. So I'm just gonna say, if you like TV movie type stuff from this era, then you'll probably really dig this. Now, one criticism that I will give it, and I know that a lot of people are going to have this criticism, it's very predictable. Like, as soon as, you know, the opening scene, you have like kind of a prologue type thing, and then like as soon as the opening scene happens and it starts building up, there's really no mystery as to like what's going to happen. It did end not differently than I thought, but they went it's, and maybe this is a spoiler, but it did have like kind of a more downer ending than I was expecting. So I actually kind of like that, because I feel like a lot of British and Australian movies will go for the downer ending, where American movies are usually kind of like, well, that's like too much of a bummer. But yeah, so it did have that, but you're going to be able to figure out what's going on like almost immediately. So especially because, you know, movies like this have been made, you know, tons of movies like this have been made since then. So it's not going to be any surprise. But that said, if you really like these kind of just creepy, culty sort of films, and you haven't seen this one, this is one is definitely worth watching, even though, as I said, it's not going to be any surprise. So this was actually directed by a guy named Ian Coughlan, I guess is how you pronounce Coughlan or Coughlan. Not sure you pronounce it. And he actually did mostly work in TV, which is probably why the movie comes across like that. And some of the funding was also from Australian television, Australian Film Commission and Fontana Films and stuff. And some of the other, like I think an Australian TV network. Now, most people will recognize the main girl in this who plays Allison is played by Joanne Samuel, who I believe was also in Mad Max. The other actors, a couple of them looked kind of familiar, but I couldn't, like, place where I'd seen them before. So the one thing I will say, and I think the best thing about this movie, at least for me, because the story was kind of, like, predictable, like I said, you pretty much knew where it was going. But honestly, the best thing about it was the two leads, like the guy and the girl, Allison, and her boyfriend, Pete, who's played by an actor named Lou Brown. Those two were just really so, you know, they weren't flashy or, you know, anything like that, but they were just kind of like regular people, and they were really likable, and they seemed really, you know, their relationship seemed very cool, like very organic, and I really, really liked the way they interacted with each other, and I really liked the way Lou Brown in particular, the boyfriend character, he was actually the best character, I think, to me, and I'll get into that in a minute. But so what you have sort of like a prologue, which takes place when Allison is only 16 years old. It's the same actress, you know, the actress is supposed to play a 16-year-old and then a 19-year-old, even though she's clearly like in her mid-20s, but you know, that's par for the course. They did that a lot back then. So at the beginning, she's 16, and she's at a house with her, like, two school friends. So they have their little school uniforms on and everything like that. Her friends' names are Chrissy and Maureen, and they are, of course, playing with a Ouija board, which, you know, if you do that in a horror movie, obviously, like, bad shit is gonna ensue, and indeed, that is what happens in this situation. So they kind of start fucking around with it. It's not actually a Ouija board. They actually made it with, it looked like Scrabble tiles, and they had, like, a glass in the middle. So what ends up happening is that Chrissy, one of the girls, she seems to get possessed by a spirit who says that he is Allison's dead father. And this spirit warns Allison, don't go home for your 19th birthday or like bad shit will happen. And it's like kind of says creepy shit like that. Then there's all kind of like paranormal hell breaks loose. The windows bust open. Shit starts flying around. And a bookcase then falls on Chrissy, the girl that was possessed. And you find out later actually killed her. It does look like they killed her. And then like later on when she's telling it to her boyfriend, yeah, she did get killed. So then we jump ahead. 3 years. So it's getting to be the time for Allison to turn 19, which obviously is something that the ghost warned her about. You know, don't go home for your 19th birthday. It's like this big thing. And she's kind of been thinking about it like all this time, presumably. So she has moved to, I think is Sydney. I think that's where they shot this. And she's working in like a record store. And her boyfriend, Pete, is a radio DJ. Like he works at a radio. So she is going to, her and Pete are actually going to spend his birthday together. They're like looking forward to it. But then her Aunt Jenny calls from wherever she grew up or moved from, which I assume was someplace out in the country, and says, you should come home for your 19th birthday because, you know, all the relatives are coming and we haven't seen you in a long time. And, you know, it would be really nice to see you and we want to have a big party for you. And she's kind of just like, nah, I don't really want to do that. But then because she's reluctant, Aunt Jenny says, Oh, well, I didn't want to say this, and don't tell him I told you anything, but your Uncle Dean is like really, really sick, like implying that he's dying. And it's like maybe this is the last time you'll get to see him alive and all this other kind of stuff. So she's like laying a major guilt trip on. So Allison's still kind of like, fuck me, I really don't want to do this. I kind of wanted to stay here with my boyfriend, like we had plans and everything. But at last, she's just kind of like, okay, fine, I will come home for a few days. You guys have a party, it'll be fine. And again, because she's reluctant, her boyfriend Pete is like, "Well, do you want me to like go with you?" He's like, "I'll at least drive you up there." You know what I mean? And then he's like, "Cause my dad kind of lives in that area. I can go visit my dad, and then I can pop over and see you. So, you know, if you have to get out of your family's house." So she's like, "Yes, thank you. That would be very nice." Now, you find out later, like while they're driving up. So, Aunt Jenny and Uncle Dean were ostensibly like Allison's, you know, parents because she says, "Oh, my parents died in a car accident when I was a baby, so I didn't know them. And my aunt and uncle like took over my care. So they've raised me my whole entire life. So, you know, I felt kind of bad just like blowing them off, even though I didn't really want to go home." Now, interestingly, so they get up to the house while, again, while they're on the drive, and this is one thing that I really liked about the Pete, the boyfriend character, is that she basically tells him, you know, she's like, "I really didn't want to go home for my 19th birthday." And she's like, "This is going to sound really stupid, but back when I was 16, we had this seance thing with like with the Ouija board. And it seemed like my dead dad told me, 'Hey, don't go home for your 19th birthday.' And I've been thinking about it the whole time." Awesomely, her boyfriend does not laugh at her. Does not be like, "That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard," which I think is one of the reasons I like his character, because he really seems to like go against type, but in a way that doesn't make it seem like it was deliberate. He just seems like he's being a regular dude. And the fact that it stood out to me, and I'll get into like more shit that he did later that like really stood out to me, I'm like, wow, what a good character. It's interesting because I guess the fact that it stood out to me is sort of indicative that a lot of horror movies have this kind of trope where a lot of times, and it's usually female characters, not always, where they're the ones like experiencing something weird or experiencing something paranormal, and they try to tell, you know, we talked about this a little bit when we talked about like the show A Haunting and everything, where you get a thing where it's like the woman is the one seeing all the ghosts and shit, and then she'll try to tell her husband, and he'll be like, you're hysterical, you don't know what you're doing." So I feel like that's like such a trope in horror movies that seeing a dude that was not like that really like stood out to me, and it didn't really occur to me until after the movie was over that I was just kind of like, wow, that was like really not a character that you saw. But like I said, it didn't seem like they were trying to deliberately subvert the, you know, the stereotype. It just seemed like that's kind of what the character was like, you know what I mean? And I don't even know if they were even into like subverting the stereotypes back in 1981. So I just kind of feel like that it was just like a very organic character. So he doesn't laugh at her or anything. He's just kind of like, because she's like, "Well, do you believe in that paranormal stuff?" And he's just like, "Well, you know," he's like, "We actually did a series on the paranormal, like on his radio show." And he's like, "And I saw some shit or heard some shit on there that I thought was like pretty weird and that I couldn't explain." So he's like, "I don't really know. You know, it's like, you know, I'm kind of skeptical," but he's like, "It could be." So he's just very like matter of fact about it. And like I said, he's not teasing her about it or anything. And, you know, so it's kind of cool like that. So she gets dropped off at her aunt and uncle's house, and Pete drops her off. He goes off to, he's like, "Well, I'm gonna be in town, you know, I'm gonna go see my dad or whatever, and then, you know, we can hang out, we can go to the beach or whatever." So she gets dropped off at her aunt and uncle's house, and immediately it seems like the shit that Aunt Jenny said on the phone about, oh, Uncle Dean is dying and stuff, doesn't really seem all that legit. I mean, obviously he seems, you know, they're older, but he seems like pretty spry. So, Aunt Jenny immediately like cuts this down. She's just kind of like, "Yeah, I mean, he looks like really good now, but he doesn't know that I told you, so don't say anything about it," and blah, blah, blah. He's trying to like pretend like he's not dying or whatever. Obviously, he's not dying. They just wanted to like get her up there. Like I said, this is kind of why this movie's like very predictable, because you know, as soon as she gets there, that some sketchy fucking shit is going on. Like this aunt and uncle want her for something, wanted her to come up there. And they're trying to get her to, like, not leave and trying to get her to, like, stay in the house with them. And they're usually trying to, like, guilt her into it. Like, oh, we haven't seen you in years. And it's like, why do you want to go off to the beach with your boyfriend? And we haven't seen you. You should stay here. And, like, it kind of works at first. But then after a while, she's like, bro, like, back off. You know what I mean? Just, like, I'm a fucking adult. And it's like, why are you trying to keep me in the house? And she gets, like, really skeeved out by it. She also gets skeeved out by, there's this, ever since she was a kid, she said, there was this stuff in the backyard, like a gate or whatever, and she was never supposed to go back there. And the aunt and uncle always said, oh, it's because it's all full of, like, snakes and stuff, you know, because Australia. So there's all kind of, like, poisonous what have you back there. And, you know, it's all overgrown and blah, blah, blah. And she's just kind of like, I think I'm going to check out what the fuck is back there, you know what I mean? So she goes back there and essentially finds, like, a mini Stonehenge. Which she's like, huh, okay, well, that's a little weird. Now, she actually does tell her uncle, she's like, what the fuck? Why is there, like, mini Stonehenge back there? And the uncle is just, like, totally fine. He's just kind of like, oh, you know, the guy that used to have this house a long time ago, he was really into folklore and all this other kind of stuff. So he built that back there because he was, like, an amateur astronomer and wanted to see if it really worked and all this other kind of stuff. So I was like, oh, good save. All right. Even though everybody knows that that's not why that shit is back there. Now, as I said, as she continues, like, staying in this house, weirder and weirder shit happens. Like, she's sleeping one night and this really, really old woman comes in her room in a wheelchair and is, like, trying to touch her face and stuff, which kind of reminded me of, like, The Touch of Satan, actually, if you've seen that movie. It was on Mystery Science Theater. But yeah, it was just kind of like, that woman was like a witch that was like 200 years old or something. But so this woman comes in there and she's like, what the fuck? And then, like, you know, the aunt is just kind of like, oh, that's your great grandmother. You never met her before. She came here for your birthday party. And she's like, okay, can you not have her, like, wheelie in here in the room? It's, like, really, really unsettling. So there's that. And then she starts having a bunch of nightmares about essentially, like, cults. So, like I said, the nightmares that she has, that's pretty much what's going to happen. That's why it's kind of not really a surprise when it does happen. So, as I said, it's not going to surprise anyone. Much like in Rosemary's Baby, there's just kind of like this big cult, and they sort of worship this goddess, Celtic goddess, I guess. I don't know if it's real or not, named Myrna. I think it's M-I-R-N-E or M-I-R-N-A. I'm not really sure. And so she, like, goes from body to body, you know what I mean? So it's like she's in one body and then they have a ritual and they transfer her to another one and blah, blah, blah. So that's kind of what's going on. Again, one of the best things about this is that her boyfriend, Pete, I mean, Jenny, or Allison, rather, is actually, like, pretty, like I said, skeeved out. So she's always kind of like, she doesn't, I mean, she's grown up with her aunt and uncle her whole life, so I don't think she legitimately, like, first jumps to, oh, they're in a cult and they want to use me as a vessel for their evil goddess demon or whatever. But you know, but she does kind of be like, well, let's spend as much time out of the house as possible because they're weirding me out and they're being really, like, suffocating. But Pete, to his credit, good old Pete, and like I said, I was watching this movie going, yeah, you go, guy. All right. Like, he pretty much immediately, because he'll show up at the house, and then, you know, the aunt and uncle are like, well, we want her to stay here, and we really wish that you wouldn't be around so much. And he's just kind of like, nah, bro, that's not what's going to happen. And he's not, like, real, like, fucking aggressive about it, but he's just kind of like, yeah, I'm going to get to the fucking bottom of this. And so he pretty much twigs onto the fact that something really weird is going on. And he legit, like, breaks into their house one night and is trying to get her out of the house and all this other stuff. So, so he's really, like, proactive. He really knows something's the matter. And he legit, like, you know, goes to a friend of his that's, you know, into the occult and stuff and is like, what the fuck is going on? And, like, tells her the stuff that he knows. And he tries to figure it out and he's, like, investigating. And like I said, he keeps showing up at the house, like, you know, and so I really liked that character. I really liked that he wasn't, you know, and like I said, it's a pretty common trope in horror movies where a lot of characters, usually dudes, they don't really believe the paranormal stuff until it's too late. This one, I really liked that he seemed really on the ball, You know, and he's like, I need to get, you know, my girlfriend out of here because something really weird's going on. And he was, you know, willing to go kind of the distance, like I said, breaking and entering and all this other stuff to figure out what the fuck was going on and try to get her the fuck out of there. And I really, really liked that. So honestly, the best thing about that was like, was his character and like the interaction with him and the girlfriend. Cause I really like that. Again, I kind of feel like maybe American horror movies in particular, they try to sort of like increase the conflict. So they always kind of have conflicts between, you know, a husband and wife character or whatever, like or friends or whatever. So they always have, so that's like, you know, so they have that extra thing. It's like all this conflict going on between the characters. Oh, and then they have to deal with a monster. But honestly, sometimes it's kind of refreshing to see something where there's not conflict, where the two of them are actually genuinely in love with each other. They're not fighting. They seem to get along really well. And when one of them is in danger, he immediately like jumps to and is like, yeah, I'm going to figure this shit out and figure out what's going on. So it was like really, really cool to see that. And like I said, I think that was probably my favorite thing about it. And the fact that I noticed it and that it stood out so much really kind of threw into stark relief, I guess, how many horror movies don't have that, like are not like that, or like I said, go with more of like the conflict character base. And it's not always, like I said, it's not always like boyfriend, girlfriend, husband and wife. Sometimes it's just like friends or brother and sister or whatever. They always have like a conflict between them that is another layer on top of whatever the antagonist is that they're fighting. So it was kind of cool like to see more like cooperation. But yeah, so if you like sort of TV movies from this era, if you like kind of it, this is kind of like a folk horror in the sense that, I mean, it's set in the modern day, obviously, or in 1981, but it does have like a kind of, you know, Stonehenge-y Celtic cult type of thing going on. It's not overtly folk horror, but you could still, it still has folk horror aspects. As I said, its very influence seems to be from like Rosemary's Baby, where all of these people are coming in and they're all kind of like in on whatever this plot is, and she doesn't really know what's going on. You know, they do things like drug her and, you know, have a doctor in there that's, you know, much like in Rosemary's Baby, that's, you know, in with the cult and everything. So they have all that kind of going on. And then you have like one person, it, you know, in that sense, it's not like Rosemary's Baby because she does actually have a boyfriend and, you know, he has a friend too that's also like into the occult. And they're actually like advocating on behalf of her and trying to save her. Whereas Rosemary's Baby, I mean, Rosemary didn't really have that. She was kind of like by herself, which was scary. But I mean, this is not, there's no, you know, nudity, there's no blood, there's no, you know, there's some like spooky kind of imagery, which I really like. So it is very much like a TV movie, but that's not a knock against it though, because as I said, I kind of like these sort of low key, you know, sort of slow burn, you know, TV movie-esque stuff from this era. And if you like that, if that sounds like that kind of, yeah, thing that you would maybe vibe with, then check this out, because I feel like I had never heard of it. And I'm, you know, I'm not like the world's biggest expert on horror movies, but if I haven't seen horror movies, I've at least like heard of ones, but this one I had actually never heard of before. So, you know, and shout out to like that folk horror documentary on Shudder for even just mentioning it. So, and then they added it on Shudder so I could watch it, and I was just kind of like, well, that was a pretty good little movie, you know what I mean? It's not, as I said, it's not earth shattering. You're gonna know pretty much exactly what's going on like in the first 10 minutes, but like I said, it didn't bother me at all. I was, you know, I just enjoyed watching it. I enjoyed the characters, and I just thought it was like a cool little Australian horror flick. So, as I said, if that sounds pretty cool, it's on Shudder at the moment. If you want to check it out, I'm sure you could be able to stream it other places too, but I don't know where. I watched it on Shudder. But yeah, it was pretty good and definitely worth watching. So that'll do it for this Flickers of Fear. I will see you guys on the next one. Bye.